Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gannon. For the next hour and a half, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, I want all your opinions, and I want all your beliefs. And of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN, that's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN, and you can send messages to the show at blogtalkradio, at Go For It Gann. That's my Twitter page, that's at Go For It Gann, so you can send me messages there, and while you're there, it would be helpful. I would love you, and I also will follow back if you follow me on Twitter, and that's at Go For It Gann. Send messages to the show at Go For It Gann, and follow me on Twitter at Go For It Gann. Got a big show for you tonight. Expect to be joined by Philadelphia Eagles offensive lineman Evan Mathis. And Evan will stop by to talk about their big game, the Eagles' big game against the Dallas Cowboys. And Eagles at 6-8, they still have a shot to win the NFC East. And also expect to be joined by WBA and IBF junior welterweight champion Lamont Peterson. And Lamont had a big-time victory, a controversial victory, but a great fight against Amir Khan, and he came out on top, and he is the champion. He got the key to the city of D.C., Washington, D.C., today. So things are on the up and up for Lamont Peterson. He is the champion, and we're going to talk to him about that fight. Also, we're going to bring in 11-time Pro Bowler, Hall of Fame semifinalist, 2012 Hall of Fame semifinalist, 2011 Hall of Fame finalist, the one, the only, Willie Rofe, and we're going to talk all things NFL with him, and we're going to get into a little NBA talk as well as the NBA season kicks off Sunday, Christmas Day, and NBA is back, and Christmas is just not Christmas without the NBA. I said it, I'll say it again, Christmas is just not Christmas without the NBA. It's not. All right, shut up. We're going to start in Philadelphia, and we're going to start with the Philadelphia Eagles. The Philadelphia Eagles are 6-8, but the Philadelphia Eagles have a shot, and a fairly legitimate shot in a lot of ways. Obviously, they need help, and that help has to start at MetLife Stadium, Jets and Giants. The Jets have to do the Eagles a favor. So they got to beat the New York Giants, and I think it's a thing that will happen. I think the Jets will beat the Giants. I think the Jets have been craving and starving to be the top dogs in New York City. They've been craving for that. Rex Ryan's wanted that ever since he became coach of the New York Jets. He wanted New York to become a Jets town. That's what he wanted, and so this is an opportunity for this to happen. This is an opportunity for this to happen, and I think it will happen. Both teams coming off bad losses, but both teams need this game to get into to try to get into the playoffs. And I think the Jets have proven these past few years that this is their month. This is the time they make their run. And the Giants have proven otherwise. This is the time where they fold. So we shall see, but I think the Jets win that football game. And so I think what's going to happen is the Jets lose, and I think the Eagles go into Dallas, and I think they beat the Cowboys. They blew the Cowboys out earlier this season, and now they have an opportunity to beat the Cowboys again. Obviously, it's going to be a lot closer game. Obviously, it's going to be a playoff-like atmosphere, especially if the Giants lose on Sunday. I think it's going to be a playoff-type atmosphere there at Cowboys Stadium. So I'm expecting a playoff atmosphere at Cowboys Stadium. I'm expecting a big-time football game between two teams that don't really like each other. It is a rivalry game. It is NFC football at its best. And NFC football, there's no greater football than NFC East football. I love NFC East football. Grew up on NFC East football big time. And so, you know, I know NFC East football is physical. It's rough. It's tough. And we're going to see that this week between the Cowboys and Eagles. And I think even more so if the Giants lose to the Jets. So I think the Eagles could sneak in to the playoffs. I really do. I think they can win the NFC East at 8-8. I think the scenarios that must happen could happen, legitimately happen. And so if that does happen, and we're obviously at this point, we're stepping over a lot of things right now. But if it does happen, the Eagles do get in the playoffs. They are one of the more dangerous teams in the playoffs. They are a very dangerous team. That offense of Michael Vick, DeSean Jackson, Shady McCoy, arguably the best running back in football. Brent Celek is stepping up his game. The offensive line is gelling. I mean, this team is playing some good football at the right time. Now, we'll see if they can continue this and continue and keep this going. But right now they're playing good football. And in terms of the talent, it's hard to deny the talent. Jason Babin, 18 sacks, had 3 sacks last week against the Jets and had another 3 sacks the week before against the Miami Dolphins. So they're getting pressure up front. They're getting some plays made by the linebackers are playing better. Casey Matthews there caused the fumble against Antonio Holmes. Kirk Coleman helped him out. But, I mean, they're playing some good football, the defense, and they're playing better football. But, you know, it's a lot easier to play good football against Tony Romo, a lot easier to play good football against Matt Moore of the Miami Dolphins and Mark Sanchez of the New York Jets. Tony Romo is a different story. Tony Romo has been playing some good football of late, some very good football. And the Cowboys essentially have given away the last couple of games. I mean, you had the situation where they iced their own kicker against the Cardinals. They lost that game. And then against the Giants, similar deal, made the first field goal. The timeout was called, though, by Tom Coughlin of the New York Giants. They kick it again. This time it's blocked by Jason Pierre-Paul. And the New York Giants win the football game. And the Cowboys essentially gave 2 football games away. And not to mention against that Giants game, they were up by 12 points pretty late in that ball game. And so they should have won that game. That was a game they should have won. They should have beat the Cardinals as well. The Cowboys are playing some decent football. And they played some decent football and had a great game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a team that I thought the Cowboys would lose to, but I didn't realize, and I know the Buccaneers have been struggling. I haven't seen a lot of Tampa Bay Buccaneers football games, but watching them on Saturday night, you saw a team that seemed to regress. Freeman seemed to take that step back after moving very forward. I mean, it just didn't look good for Tampa Bay, and I'm surprised to see that out of them. I expected better. I figured, you know, this is a team that had been struggling throughout this season, but I figure an opportunity on the big stage, Saturday Night Football, national televised game, you figure they would come up with a better effort. But they didn't, and the Cowboys won, and credit to the Dallas Cowboys going into Tampa Bay and getting the victory. But I think the Eagles win this week. I really do think the Eagles win this week, and one of the keys to the Eagles winning is going to be Shady McCoy, and Shady McCoy had an impressive performance against the Cowboys when they played last time. And at the time, Dallas was number one against the rush. But, I mean, he was impressive. He was impressive last time that these two teams played. And he had a very good game against the Dallas Cowboys. And he ran the ball very well against the Dallas Cowboys. And at the time, like I said, the Dallas Cowboys, that defense was the top-rated defense against the run going into that game. But the Eagles had a lot of success. They had a lot of success running the football in that game, a lot of success running the football in that game, and Shady McCoy led the way in that particular football game against the Dallas Cowboys. And in that game, 30 rushes, 185 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So he had a great ball game. They ran the ball well. They threw the ball well. And they did pretty much everything that they wanted to do and anything they anything they wanted to do against the Cowboys in that particular football game. They had their way with that Cowboy team. They had their way with that team. And they did whatever they had wanted to do. They did it. anything they wanted to do, they did close to 500 yards total offense in that particular football game. So they did anything they wanted to do in that game. They were up and down the field, running the ball, passing the ball. Vic was effective. Shady McCoy was effective. And they had a big-time performance against the Dallas Cowboys, probably their best performance of the year. Probably the best performance of the year against the Dallas Cowboys. But we shall see what happens this week as they play the Dallas Cowboys in Cowboys Stadium, the building that Jerry built. We'll see if the Eagles can get it done. You're listening to Go For It on blogtalkradio.com/Pegan. And make sure, as we're about to go to commercial break, make sure you stick around because we're coming back with Evan Mathis of the Philadelphia Eagles.
Almeida, a.k.a. Corey Live, host of Pictureka on the Hub and warm-up host for American Idol and Dancing with the Stars. And right now, you are listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio with my man Paulie G and Jeremy. Get it!
And get it is what we do as we're back. And we're going to bring in now offensive lineman for the Philadelphia Eagles, the one, the only, Evan Mathis. Evan, how are you, sir? Hello? Okay, we lost Evan. Hopefully he'll call back. Hopefully Evan will call back. That didn't sound good. I thought I heard a collision or something. But hopefully Evan Mathis will call back. But, again, you look at the Philadelphia Eagles. This is a team that has a lot to play for and a lot to do against the Dallas Cowboys this week, and I think they can do it. I really, truly think they can do it. They have the talent, they have the ability, and they're playing good football right now. And the Cowboys are too. The Cowboys are too. And as I outlined there a few minutes ago, the Cowboys were a couple field goals. They're two field goals away from essentially having put this. If they would have made those field goals, this division would have been put away. If they wouldn't have, Jason Garrett wouldn't have iced his kicker, they would have put this game, put the season away, put the division away, I should say. If the defense would have played a little better, and if Tony Romo could have hit Miles Austin there late in that football game, the Cowboys would have beat the Giants as well. I mean, they should have beat the Cardinals. They should have beat the New York Giants. And if they would have done that, this game would have pretty much meant nothing, and they would have essentially have put the NFC East away. They would have won the NFC pretty much if that was the case. They would have won the NFC East. So you look at it, and the Dallas Cowboys are in good shape. I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles are in good shape, and the Dallas Cowboys probably would have been in better shape if they would have just beaten the Cardinals, a team they should have beaten. If they would have just beaten the Cowboys, the Giants, a team that they had and a team that they should have beat. And so we'll see what happens moving forward. And we'll see going forward what happens, but I think the Philadelphia Eagles will beat the Cowboys Sunday. And I think the New York Giants will beat the – I think the New York Jets will beat the Giants on Sunday, and I think it's all going to shape up for something beautiful to happen. It's all going to shape up for something beautiful to happen if you're an Eagles fan, and that's the Philadelphia Eagles possibly sneaking in to the playoffs, believe it or not. The crowd goes wild. The crowd is loving it. The crowd is loving it. The crowd is loving it. They're getting into it. They're enjoying it. They believe that the Eagles could do it. I believe, they believe, and we shall see what happens moving forward. And also, speaking of moving forward, the NBA is back. And back in full swing, and it will be up and running and up and going December 25th, Christmas Day. Christmas Day, December 25th, it will be on and popping in the NBA. It will be a beautiful, it's going to be a beautiful thing when the NBA comes back. A beautiful thing. I love NBA basketball. NBA basketball is fantastic. And let's bring in now the one, the only, Evan Mathis. Evan, how are you, sir?
No, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
Thanks for joining us, sir. And Evan, let's get right down to it. An impressive performance against the Jets. A 45-19 blowout. The offense was clicking on all cylinders. Talk about your performance on the offensive side of the ball against the Jets.
We learned a lot from playing the Dolphins the week before. A very similar style of defense as the Jets. And we put some things on tape that we needed to correct, as well as things we could capitalize on. And we had a good week of work and went into the game Sunday with those corrections in hand and executed.
And executed you did. And for whatever reason, I mean, you guys have scored 72 points against the Ryan brothers. What is it about this Eagles offense and the Ryan brothers?
I don't know, man. I think it's just, that's just the weird timing of it, but yeah, they do have really talented defenses. They're very good coaches. But I think everybody just really focused on the game plan and really brought their best effort.
And that you did. Offensively, you brought a big-time effort, and defensively, you guys have brought a big-time effort. And it seems like the defense is turning this thing around. They struggled earlier in the year, but things seem to be coming together on the defensive side of football. Are you seeing that?
Oh yeah, I mean more so than just coming together. They're playing lights out, making the game, you know, put much better position for us. I think we're both offense and defense are complementing each other and really helping each other out, doing our jobs.
And were you surprised how easy it was for you guys against the Jets?
No, I mean it wasn't easy. It might look that way, but it might look that way from the score. But we're still out there busting it to make that happen.
And busting it, you guys, in. We're talking to Evan Mathis, offensive guard for the Philadelphia Eagles. And, Evan, you guys are 6-8 and still have a shot at the playoffs. Everybody wrote you off after the Seahawks game when you were 4-8. Is it hard to believe at this point that you guys still have a shot?
No, I'm glad we do. That's all I'm worried about right now. I'm not looking back at what could have been. I'm not looking back at what should have been. I think all of us right now are just, you know, we know there's a couple of things that need to happen for us to get in, and we can only control what we can control, and that starts with us taking care of business.
And taking care of business is what you guys need to do against the Dallas Cowboys. Be honest with me, Evan. Before the game against the New York Jets, did you take a peek at the Redskins-Giants game?
Yeah, in passing, I had. I mean, I might have heard this score of somebody talking about it in the training room. But I wasn't really trying to watch it or trying to focus on it. I don't want to have anything end up being a distraction. Knowing one way or the other, I don't think it really would affect how we came out and played.
And be honest here again, will you take a peek at the Jets Giants game before the Cowboy game this weekend?
I won't do everything I can to avoid it. I'm sure it might be on. In the training room, or you know, the way things spread these days with your social media outlets and all the things that are out there. I'm sure we're going to hear about it.
And how difficult is it for you as a player having to rely on other teams to kind of help you get in?
You wish you controlled your own destiny at this point, but that's the reality of it is we didn't put ourselves in the position to be where we needed to be. Well, if we're 6-8 right now, relying on other people. If we had won a few more games, we wouldn't be in that position, but that's our reality right now, and that's all, we have to live with that, and we can only control what's in front of us. We can only take care of business on game day.
We're talking to Eagles guard Evan Mathis. And, Evan, your fellow offensive linemates have paved the way for LeSean McCoy to rush for over 1,200 yards and 17 touchdowns at this point in the season. You see this guy up and close and personal. How great is LeSean McCoy?
He's great. He's not just a great player. He's a great guy. He's a great guy to have in the locker room. He's funny. He's energetic. He's very on the field. He's awesome. He's elusive, dynamic. He can improvise. He has a lot of natural ability.
Have you ever seen anything like it?
No, I really haven't. He's especially someone so young in his career, I think the sky's the limit for him. He just continues to work. If he just continues to work the way he is right now, he knows he has improvements to make, and he works hard to do that. He doesn't feel like he's arrived in any way, shape, or form. He's still ready to go out and put the work in, and it's good to see in a young back like that, that hunger.
And again, you talked about the guy is playing some big-time football, lights-out football. And Evan, offensive line has been playing some pretty good football late as well. And you talked about last time how you felt like you guys were coming together. And it seems like right now you guys are gelling at the right time as a unit.
Yeah, we have our performances that some good and some bad. We did win the Miami game, but we didn't feel good about it as an offensive line because we would like to have more success in the running game. But we got in the film room and got with Howard Mudd and made those corrections and come together. But yeah, I do feel like we've made a lot of strides over the course of this season.
And definitely, you guys have. And you talked about Howard Mudd, well respected offensive line coach in this league. How much has he helped you this season?
Oh, a tremendous amount. You know, I came in here, because I came to this organization because I knew it was a well-run organization, and I knew the resume that Howard Mudd had. You know, if I could play my best football here, anybody would be Howard Mudd, and that's where I am right now. He's brought out the best player in me. He's taught me a lot of new techniques that have tremendously helped my performance on the field. And I'm very grateful to have him as a coach.
And again, he's done a great job with this offensive line. You guys are gelling at the right time. And we're talking to Evan Mathis, guard for the Philadelphia Eagles. And Evan, you guys traveled to Dallas Christmas Eve. You dominated the Cowboys the first time around. I think obviously it's going to be much closer this time. But what do you feel like you guys need to do to defeat the Dallas Cowboys again?
Oh, we just have to execute. We can't act like that. We can't. We're not carrying the scoreboard from last time. It's 0-0. This is a brand new battle. Both teams are fighting for a playoff spot, and it's going to be a tough game.
And every game, Eagles Cowboys is always a tough game, always a beautiful atmosphere. And are you expecting a playoff type atmosphere this time around?
I personally have never played. I've played everywhere in the NFL except Dallas and San Francisco.
Okay.
So I don't know what kind of turnout they usually have in Dallas. I've heard it's pretty good with them fighting for a playoff spot. I expect a huge turnout. Their stadium holds over 100,000. There's not many NFL stadiums that hold near that amount. So if it's not packed, it's still carrying more fans than your average stadium. So I expect a pretty intense atmosphere for sure.
And this is your first year with the Philadelphia Eagles. Have you heard about the rivalry with the Cowboys and how intense and how much hatred the fans have for the Cowboys?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I've gotten a good taste of it, especially the first time around when we played them. That question came up a lot, and I definitely got the feel for it, through talking to fans on Twitter and just trying to be in the loop on everything. And just the atmosphere in the locker room and at practice and in the media. I'm definitely got a feel for it now.
And it's going to be big. It's going to be big. And if the Jets can beat the Giants, it's going to be even bigger. And Evan, you're a guy, as a football player, you make decent money. What does a guy like Evan Mathis want for Christmas?
I ask for nothing. I don't want anything from anybody. I'm very easy to please. There's nothing I really need. I just like hanging out with my family, my friends. I do some gift buying myself, but I really don't. Yeah, I'm not the kind of person that really wants any gifts. If someone buys me something simple, like some clothes or some socks, I'm good to go.
So you're not going to treat yourself to any type of Christmas present this time around?
No, I'm not. I'm saving my money. No.
And then that's a wise thing to do. It's always good to save your money, especially in this type of economy. That's smart thinking on your part. Very smart thinking.
Appreciate it.
And Evan, I saw your Twitter page. You're a comedian. You like to make people laugh. You got any jokes for us today?
No, I got none. I got none for you. I usually, get on Twitter all day and try to think of some funny stuff, try to be entertaining. I'm more of a writer type. I'm not a good on the spot type.
Okay. So you'd be more of a behind the scenes type of guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Or if I'm doing something in TV, just let me rehearse it first.
Okay, fair enough. And Evan, you like to connect with the fans. How can fans connect with Evan Mathis?
Well, they can follow me on Twitter, Evan. At EvanMathis69. That's pretty much the easiest way. Sometimes I throw out my Words of Friends username on there or my email address, and I pretty much do everything through Twitter. I like the fan interaction and the social media where it's gotten to these days. It's pretty cool.
And Evan, I know I heard you say that you like to give other people Christmas presents. And Evan, I am a lifelong Eagles fan. I could use a Christmas present. Can you give me a Christmas present Saturday with a victory over the Dallas Cowboys?
Yeah, I think it's a good time for it. Christmas Eve. We'll get over there. We'll work on that for you. Let me talk to my elves and see if we can make you one of those wins.
Greatly appreciated, and hopefully one of your elves can take a walk over to MetLife Stadium, and hopefully the New York Jets can beat the Giants as well.
We got to send some elves over there too, for sure.
Evan, greatly appreciate you stopping by, man. Good luck Saturday against the Dallas Cowboys. Hopefully you guys can get it done, and let's do this again.
All right, man. Good talking to you. Thanks for having me again.
Evan Mathis, Philadelphia Eagles. They have a big one against the Dallas Cowboys this Saturday. It's going to be a big football game. The Eagles still have a shot, still have an opportunity. Believe it or not, this was a team 4-8, essentially left for dead. But Dan Bailey, thank goodness for Dan Bailey. Thank goodness for Jason Garrett. Thank goodness for Jason Pierre-Paul and the New York Giants. Thank goodness to Rob Ryan and his defense for coughing up a lead late in the game against the New York Giants. Thank you to all those people, and thanks to all those people, the Eagles still have a shot to win the NFC East. And who knows, after the Green Bay Packers losing this week against the Kansas City Chiefs, anything's possible. Anything's possible, and the Green Bay Packers, to me, shows some vulnerability. They're banged up on the offensive line. Greg Jennings also was out, but, they show some vulnerability. How much vulnerability is, we'll have to see moving forward. But they did show that they are vulnerable. They did show that they are vulnerable. But we'll see how that plays out moving forward. We'll see. But you look at it, the Green Bay Packers, and everybody wondered, and I heard a lot of you talk about this, what would happen if Aaron Rodgers struggled? And I think we got a glimpse of what would happen, or what did happen when Aaron Rodgers struggles. We got a glimpse of what happens when Aaron Rodgers struggles. And when Aaron Rodgers struggles, the Green Bay Packers struggle. And they struggled in that football game against the Kansas City Chiefs. The Kansas City Chiefs shut down that Packers offense. They shut them down. And that's something that just does not happen. You do not shut down the Green Bay Packers offense. No one has shut down the Green Bay Packers offense this season. They have scored and scored and went up and down the football field throughout the course of this season. But the Kansas City Chiefs shut them down. They got pressure on Aaron Rodgers, and they were able to be very effective against Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. And ultimately, they were able to win the ball game against the Green Bay Packers. It was crazy. It came out of nowhere because I was one of the guys that felt like, you know what, this Green Bay Packers team can go undefeated. The way they were playing on the offensive side of the football, the way Aaron Rodgers was playing, there was no way I thought the Kansas City Chiefs or anybody in the National Football League would beat the Green Bay Packers this year. I didn't see it happening. And I was shocked, I was amazed, and I was stunned. But what I saw Sunday at Arrowhead, the Kansas City Chiefs, Romeo Crennel, Kyle Orton, and the Kansas City Chiefs beat the mighty Green Bay Packers. Surprise, surprise, surprise. And I think it's fair to say that we all truly were surprised at what happened in Kansas City. I think we were truly all surprised by what happened in Kansas City. There was no way that you thought the Kansas City Chiefs, if anybody was going to beat the Packers, you didn't think it would be the Kansas City Chiefs. They truly came out of nowhere and shocked us all. I was shocked. I was stunned. I was amazed. Give a lot of credit to the Kansas City Chiefs and Romeo Crennel. And who knows? If the Chiefs can finish this season strong, does Romeo Crennel get another shot as a head coach in this league? Does he get another shot? And he did something that Todd Haley did maybe 2 weeks ago, and that's put in Kyle Orton. Tyler Palko stunk to join up. He stunk. He stunk and he stinks at this stage of his career. And so if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, Todd Haley, when you had the job, you probably should have went to Orton a little sooner. I know Orton did have an injury one of those games, but, I mean, you could have found, you would have think that they would have found a way to get Kyle Orton in that game earlier than he did. And Kyle Orton threw close to 300 yards against the Green Bay Packers. And that's a defense that's 31st against the pass. That defense struggles. So you can put up points. The question is, can you stop Aaron Rodgers? That's the question. Can you stop Aaron Rodgers? Not many have to this point, but we shall see moving forward. And I want to go to the NBA now. The NBA is about to get started. Christmas Day, a lot of great matchups, a lot of great basketball that will be played on that particular day. I'm looking forward to it. And I think everybody that's an NBA fan, that's a fan of the game of basketball, is looking forward to it. NBA basketball is fantastic. NBA basketball is great. And you got a big, full slate of games on Christmas Day. A full slate. Celtics, Knicks, the new look Knicks. The Knicks will be definitely a different team. They will look different, and I think they will look better with the addition of Tyson Chandler. With Chandler now going along with Amari Stoudemire, going along with Carmelo Anthony. The only question is, and they did sign Baron Davis, but the only question is, what's going to happen at that point guard position? But the Celtics-Knicks, they started off at 12 o'clock. Then you got the Heat-Mavericks, a rematch of the NBA Finals. The Mavericks look a little different. The Heat about the same, and the Heat, I think, are definitely going to be a team that's going to gel. I think it's just they are the most talented team in basketball. When you put arguably the best wing players, I should say, in the game, and LeBron James, Dwayne Wade on the floor, and then you have Chris Bosh, arguably one of the better power forwards in the game, it's hard not to be the most talented team in basketball. This is one of the more talented teams in the game of basketball. Then you have the Bulls and Lakers at 5, and then it's all Eastern Standard Time, of course, but we'll see what happens with Kobe Bryant, how healthy he is with his wrist. He had a wrist injury. Everybody said, I'm hearing that he will go. And we'll see what the new look Lakers look like. No Lamar Odom. And I think they're going to miss Lamar Odom big time. They're going to miss him big time. He's a guy, to me, that added to the Lakers' versatility. They were a versatile, long team with Lamar Odom. I mean, at times they can go with Lamar Odom's, Gasol, and Bynum on the floor at the same time. They can go with all three of those guys at the same time. That's a long, athletic front line, a front line that's hard to contend with. And they essentially gave Lamar Odom away to the world champion Dallas Mavericks, a team that they're going to have to compete with to get to the NBA Finals. It doesn't make sense. It just does not make sense. And I know Lamar Odom was hurt by the trade or the trade rumors and the trade that was, which was later rescinded, but the trade that was done between the Hornets and Lakers and Lamar Odom was in it, he never got over that. But you would figure with Kobe Bryant in that locker room, him and Kobe were fairly close. You would think those two would come together. Kobe could talk to him and get him back and get his head right back into the mix, but it just didn't happen, and Lamar Odom was traded to Dallas. Bad move by the Lakers to just essentially give him away. And then you have the Magic and Thunder, and you have the whole Dwight Howard thing. What happens to Dwight Howard? Where does he go? Does he stay in Orlando? Does he get traded somewhere? What happens? Orlando does not want to be in a situation where they get nothing for Dwight Howard. But it's obvious, it says he wants to trade one point. It seemed like he was backing off. Then he went back to it. So, I mean, you don't know. I don't think he really knows what he wants to do. I don't think he really knows. I don't think he wants to be the bad guy in that situation. And I think, essentially, he would be the bad guy in this situation. He would be the bad guy if he asked for a trade and ultimately is traded from the Orlando Magic elsewhere. But you look at it. Dwight Howard, that thing is going to sit over that franchise throughout the course of the season. People are going to be talking. Well, how much will it affect the Magic? Will they struggle because of it? Will it be too much of a distraction for him and too much of a distraction for the ball club where they have to move him? But they want to get value for the guy. They want to get good value for the guy. So you look at it, they're not just going to give him away. They're not going to give him away. So we'll see what happens with Dwight Howard, but this situation is going to stand over this ball club throughout the whole season. And then you look at the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Oklahoma City Thunder, this team, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, Ibaka, Kendrick Perkins is back, apparently in much better shape. Not to say he was in bad shape last season, but he's in better shape this year. And so they're ready. They're poised and ready to take that next step. They got to the second round this year. The next step, in a lot of ways, you would think would be, well, they got to the conference finals. The next step would be the NBA finals. That's the next step for this ball club. But this is a team with Durant, Westbrook. I mean, they're a very talented ball club. And they're definitely going to be there in the nightcap. Clippers, Warriors, this game becomes much more appealing than it was a few weeks back with the addition of Chris Paul. And you add Chris Paul to Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan. You also added Chauncey Billups in the mix. Caron Butler is in the mix. a big-time signing there. But you look at it. Chris Paul and Tyson Chandler, they flourish together. Chris Paul with those lobs. DeAndre Jordan's going to catch some lobs from Chris Paul. Blake Griffin is going to catch some lobs from Chris Paul. Chris Paul and Tyson Chandler had a great connection with those lobs. A great connection. And it's going to happen with the Clippers. And you never thought you would say this, but the Los Angeles Clippers are the most talented team in Los Angeles. Not the Lakers. It is the Los Angeles Clippers. The Los Angeles Clippers. They're the best. They're the most talented team in Los Angeles. That they are. And you look at the team, they come off the bench with some guys as well. I mean, they can come off the bench with Amon Williams, a guy who's been a proven scorer in this league. Ryan Gomes, a tough guy, and a guy that can score a little bit. Randy Foy can score as well. You wonder in terms of size. You wonder if they're going to try to move some of these point guards that they have on the roster. Mo Williams, Eric Bledsoe on the roster, Randy Foy. A lot of guards. A lot of guards on this roster. A lot of point guards on this roster. You would think that they would find a way to try to move one of those point guards to get themselves some more help on that front line, more depth on that front line, because they can use it. They can use some help on the front line. And we'll see if they get it. We'll see if they trade Bledsoe or Foy or even Mo Williams to try to get that. But they have to get it. They have to get it. And I know a team in the Western Conference that I think a lot of people have forgotten about is the San Antonio Spurs. The San Antonio Spurs, record-wise, was the best team in the NBA. Record-wise, they were the best team in the NBA. They were the best team record-wise in the NBA. And there's still a lot of talent there. Tim Duncan, obviously, is there. Ginobili is there. Tony Parker is there. I mean, there are pieces there in San Antonio. There are pieces there. And I don't think we should sleep on them. Richard Jefferson is back another year in that system. And many thought he would be a guy that would be an amnesty guy. But he avoided that, and they brought him back. But they also added T.J. Ford in the offseason. They have some pieces there. They have some pieces, and that's a good ball club. Tiago Splitter, another year in San Antonio. DeJuan Blair. This is a team, again, record-wise, was the best in basketball. They were the best in basketball record-wise, and they fell to the Memphis Grizzlies in the playoffs. But don't sleep on San Antonio. What happens with Memphis? Do they take that next step? Are they a team that's ready to take that next step, bring it back a guy like Rudy Gay, who they missed in the playoffs? Are they poised and ready to take that next step? Will they take that next step? I mean, Zach Randolph, Z-Bo, was an absolute beast in the playoffs. Does he continue with that? They bring back Marc Gasol. He got paid. Does he continue to be motivated? Does he continue to be motivated? Rudy Gay, again, a guy, their highest paid player, him and Z-Bo. But Rudy Gay's another high paid player for the Grizzlies. What does he do? Does he come back and mesh with what they created and what they did in the playoffs and in that postseason? So we'll see. We'll see. But adding to Rudy Gay, bringing him back, that's definitely going to help your ball club. So we'll see what happens with the Grizzlies. Are they a team that's ready to take another step? You look out west right now, and you got to say the Clippers are one of the favorites, Oklahoma City, and you can't completely discount the Los Angeles Lakers. You can't discount them at all, obviously. But you got them, San Antonio, Memphis, Dallas, of course, the world champion Dallas Mavericks. And this Dallas, a team that loses Tyson Chandler in the offseason. How much will that affect them? How much will that affect them losing Tyson Chandler, a guy that really was helping them on the defensive side of the basket of the court? I mean, he blocked shots, he rebounded, he ran the floor. He was a big part of what the Dallas Mavericks do. And also J.J. Barea, he's another one that went on and signed with the Minnesota Timberwolves. He won't be in the mix. Does a guy like Vince Carter, does he come in and kind of help offset some of that? They did add a Delonte West, who I'm very high on Delonte West. He can do a lot of things, can defend, can shoot the basketball. I'm a fan of Delonte West. That's a good move for them. Definitely a good move for them. And then you got Ronnie Buckets, Ronnie Boubois, a guy that missed a lot of time last season. Maybe he can offset what they lost in J.J. Barea. He was big for the Dallas Mavericks last year during that championship run. J.J. Barea was big. He was big. But has, and you're looking at the NBA, has the power shifted to the Eastern Conference? Is the Eastern Conference now the better conference with New York getting better? Adding to Tyson Chandler, obviously, with Melo and Amari Stoudemire. Chicago with Derrick Rose, also adding a Rip Hamilton. They needed a shooting guard. They needed a shooting guard, and Rip Hamilton is a good pickup for that ball club. And they just need somebody else to take the pressure off of Derrick Rose. I mean, it was like the 2001 Philadelphia 76ers last year was for the Chicago Bulls. I mean, it was Derrick Rose, and he was – taking a lot of shots, and I truly don't think that's his game, taking all the as many shots as he did. But he had to. He had to take those shots if the Bulls were going to be successful. But you have Chicago, you have the Knicks, you still have Boston with the big three. You can't discount them, even though Jeff Green will not be there, and he's a guy they're going to miss. They're definitely going to miss Jeff Green. But then you have Miami. So you look at it, Miami, you got Chicago, Boston, the New York, do they take that step from being dangerous to being a contender? Have they taken that step? Have the Knicks taken that step? We shall see, but it seems like the balance of power has shifted to the Eastern Conference with Miami, with Chicago, with Boston, with New York. Orlando still is going to be a decent team. Atlanta, still going to be a decent team. But I think that team that's going to surprise some people, the team I think that may surprise people is the Indiana Pacers. Played the Chicago Bulls very tough in the playoffs last season, a year ago. They played them tough. And then they had a David West in the offseason, also a George Hill from the San Antonio Spurs. They added him as well. And that's to go along with Tyler Hansbrough. You got Hibbert, Roy Hibbert, who's definitely playing some good basketball and playing some good basketball for that team. Granger, of course. Paul George put in work last year for them. Collison, the point guard. I mean, this is a team that you need to look out for. I think they're going to surprise people. Are they going to get to the NBA Finals? No. But I think they're going to be a lot better than many people may think. They were the eighth seed last year, and I think they're going to improve upon that. I really do. They're going to improve upon that one. They definitely will improve, and we shall see how much they improve. But I think that's going to be a team that's going to surprise some people, the Indiana Pacers. I really like the move of adding a David West, especially if David West is healthy and the David West of old. If he's that guy, then that's a great, great pickup. That's a great, great pickup. But we shall see how that plays out moving forward. But I think the balance of power has shifted from the Eastern Conference, from the Western Conference to the Eastern Conference. The balance of power has shifted. The best teams are in the East, I think. And when it's all said and done, in terms of what's going to happen with the NBA Finals, coming out of the East, it's going to be the Miami Heat. They're coming out the East. They're going to come out the East. It's going to happen. It's just too much talent on that roster for it not to happen. And they also added Eddie Curry. They added Eddie Curry. You may laugh, but Eddie Curry is a guy, if his head's right, and he seems, and they said he's in better shape, lost a lot of weight, but if his head's right, he's a guy that can do some things for you. He gives you a presence in the post that the Heat have not had. It did not have last year. He gives you that. They also added Shane Battier, a guy that can hit a three, a guy that can defend. I mean, that's a great pickup for the Miami Heat. Watch out for the Miami Heat. I think they're a team that may win. No, not win. They will win the NBA championship next year. They will win it this year, I should say. They will win it. And speaking of champions, let's bring in the new WBA, IBF, junior welterweight champion, the one, the only, Lamont Peterson. Lamont, how are you, sir?
Well, he's going to be with you in a second, okay?
In a second, all right.
Yeah, he's going to join us in about 20 seconds, okay?
All right. Well, we'll keep a hold there, and as Lamont Peterson's getting ready to join us, and it's a great time for Lamont Peterson. It makes me wish I was Lamont Peterson right now. I mean, it's a great time for him. He's doing a lot of things right now. He got the keys to the city. He got the keys to the city today in Washington, D.C. So it's great to be Lamont Peterson right now. It's great to be this guy. I wish I was him right now. I mean, he made a career high, $650,000 in the fight against Amir Khan. I mean, the guy, and he's going to make more. He's going to be making more moving forward, a whole lot more. And whether it's against Amir Khan, whether it's against Timothy Bradley, we'll see who is it. I mean, hopefully it's against Khan again, because I want to see that one again. I really want to see that one. I mean, that was a great fight. That was a great fight. Fight of the year.
Lamont's online with you.
Lamont, how are you, sir?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Doing well. Great to have you. Great to have you. And, Lamont, today you got the keys to the city, Washington, D.C. How much of an honor was that for you?
Man, I can't even put it in words, man. It's a humbling experience. You know, I never thought, you know, of a day like this. You know, like I always say, man, you know, it was always my dream to become world champion and win belts and be on TV. But, you know, in my dream was never these days. You know, I left out these parts. And just today was, you know, it was just a great day. It was a great feeling. And, you know, it just makes me want to work that much harder, you know, just to keep things going.
And you obviously did a great job against Amir Khan. The first two rounds of Lamont, Khan knocked you down. It seemed like he was in control of the fight. And I know you told Larry Merchant after the fight that, you know, you had to go to plan B. When did you realize that you needed to go to plan B?
I was after the first round. You know, it was already like, every time we go out there, box move, you know, see how that, you know, and we thought, you know, that we'll be effective that way. But we also knew that I had a bad habit of backing straight up. And he was telling me not to do it. Just so happened I kept doing it in that round. I just, you know, didn't feel comfortable with boxing him. So, you know, when I came back after the first round, I knew at that point that backing up was going to, it was a few awkward moments, you know, when I backed up and they credited him with a knockdown. And it was, you know, it was more of a trip than anything. And me being off balance and backing up. So I knew at that point, you know, that would keep happening. So I was just like, you know what, time for plan B. And it was time to go for it. And see what he's made of. And it was right after the first round. And even in the second round, you know, a lot of people gave him that round. But when I watched it on tape, I'm not too sure that was just a calm round because, you know, he threw a lot of flashy punches. Some of them didn't land. A lot of them didn't land. But I was starting, you could see then that the tides were turning and I was starting to put, you know, some pressure on him and put my body work on him. And I was And I knew at that point, you could see when I came back to the corner, I knew that I had him at that corner.
And you did seem fairly confident. I think that was the second or third round. You were nodding your head, and you seemed very confident.
Yeah, that was after the second round. Because
okay,
I knew that, you know, I felt confident, and I knew that things, you know, were going to go my way from there.
And were you comfortable with that brawling style? Because you're more of a boxer.
Oh, yeah. The thing about us, you know, we try to be well-rounded. And, you know, I watch a lot of Chavez and fighters like that, you know, who put pressure on people. And I like to do it. You know, it's fun fighting that way. You know, I love to box and outthink people, but sometimes you just got to go fight. And I figured that was one of those nights, and that was the situation where I just had to go fight. I was totally comfortable with it. You know, I do it a lot in the gym, so, you know, it wasn't nothing new for me. It was probably new to y'all to see, but for me, you know, it's something that I do on the record.
And you had a big fight a few years back against Timothy Bradley that did not go your way. How much did you learn from that fight, and how much did that fight help you in this fight against Khan?
Man, it helped me a lot, you know, just not even in the ring, just leading up into a big fight, just not to let all the press and all that get to me, just being on that big stage like that, not to let, you know, any distraction or anything get to me. You know, I was totally comfortable going into the fight, and when I got in the ring, I still was comfortable. And that's just the main thing. It's just getting used to being on this level and fighting these top guys. And, you know, with Timothy Bradley, that was like my first big fight. And, you know, now it's kind of like my fourth or fifth, you know, with Khan. So, you know, I was much more relaxed and just picking up things along the way that definitely helped me in the Amir Khan fight.
We're talking to WBA and IBF junior welterweight champion Lamont Peterson. And Lamont, in the fight, referee Joe Cooper docked 2 points from Amir Khan for pushing. You said after the fight he should have been docked for holding your head down. Looking back on the fight now, do you think the point deductions were justified?
Yes. He definitely was pushing. And sometimes when someone's holding and you push off, you know, the ref normally don't say anything because, you know, you're trying to get your space, you're trying to get this guy off you so you can, you know, do your work. But I wasn't doing any holding or anything. I was trying to work. And because he was using it to keep me from doing the work that I wanted to do and just pushing me from just going in the inside and going to his body and, you know, doing the things that I wanted to do, I think that's not right. And it didn't, like I said, it didn't bother me, but he was pushing. And not only was he just pushing, he wasn't even pushing with his gloves. He was pushing with his elbows a lot of times. And they were just outright, just you could just see it. Everyone could see it. He wasn't trying to do anything but just push. And like I said, it didn't bother me, but I just think the referee did a good job. He do it in every fight. I wish he would have warned him more about pulling my neck down because that's really what was bothering me. You know, my legs was kind of getting tired, and my neck was hurting, and my back was tight. So, you know, him putting it on my neck was really bothering me. I was hoping he took a point from that, but, you know, he did the pushing, and I agree with him.
And were you surprised when you saw that he got points docked, the time in the 7th and the time in the 12th?
No, I wasn't, you know, because the referee warned him several times before the 7th round, and he took the point. In the 12th, I was kind of confused. I didn't know, cause, you know, I didn't notice him pushing me. But when I watched the tape, he pushed me. But I thought that he was taking a point from him hitting me on the break. That's
right.
What I thought he took the point for. And I didn't understand at the time. I was just, you know, I was like, he's taking a point from him hitting me. But, again, you know, he warned him more times, and he continued to push. And this so happened, it happened right.
And, Lamont, this was the first major title fight in D.C. since 2005. How much did the crowd help you in this fight? Lamont? I think we might have got disconnected from Lamont Peterson.
Yeah.
Lamont?
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. This was, like I said, this was the first major fight in D.C. since 2005. How much did the fan support help you in this fight?
Oh, man, they definitely helped. Just coming out, when I turned that corner to come out through the walkway and I seen all the people just waiting, all those familiar faces, you know, making noise for me, just chanting me on. And then when I was in there fighting, you know, it was a high-energy fight. And the last thing you want to do in a fight like that is to run out of energy or run out of gas. And I just hearing them chant me on, and they just kept me going, just kept me amped up and just ready to go. So, you know, I owe a lot to, you know, the fans in D.C.
We're talking to WBA and IBF junior welterweight champion Lamont Peterson. Lamont, your trainer, your manager, Barry Hunter, he slapped you in the head before the 12th round, and he's probably the only grown man that can do that to you. I mean, talk about your relationship with Barry Hunter.
It's always been, you know, a rough relationship. He always been hard on me. I guess from day one, you know, he always knew that I could take it, and that's the best way to deal with me. You know, when I was younger, 13 years old, 14, 15 even, you know, he was always much softer on the other kids but harder on me. And I'm like, man, I was starting to think that he didn't like me for some reason. I was like, man, what's wrong with this dude? And but, you know, as I got older, like 17 and 18, I understood where he was coming from at that point. And but it's always been, you know, he always been hard on me. You know, he always make things rough for me. He know that's the way I prefer things to be. He know that I perform better that way. And so, you know, he know me. So he know what to do in me.
And Lamont, when the fight ended, 12th round, fight's over, at the time, did you think you did enough to win the fight?
Yeah. When the 12th and final round ended, I knew that it was really, really close, but I knew that I did enough to win, and I was hoping that the knockdown didn't play a factor, and I felt, you know, I felt as though I won the fight, and then with the point deduction, I just knew that at that point that I had won the fight.
And take us through your mindset at this point, Michael Buffer. He says, new IBF and WBA champion of the world. What was going through your head at that point when you heard Michael Buffer make the announcement?
I was just like, man, before he was saying, I knew it was close, like I said, and I was just like, you know, I hope it's me, that name he called. And when he called it, man, I was overjoyed. I had a big leap. And that seemed like that took all my energy, and right after that, it's like I just collapsed. Everything was kind of weak, and but you know, I just felt like, you know, all the hard work finally paid off. You know, all those days at the gym when I didn't want to go, and for some strange reason, I just thought about the day. Was one time we had a prom, junior high school prom, and we used to box at the school that I went to, and the gymnasium where they had the prom was right over top of our boxing gym. And I can hear the music, I can hear them dancing, but I couldn't go because I had to train.
Okay.
And I don't know, for some reason that night came up, you know, because, you know, you give up a lot in boxing. You sacrifice a lot of things to get what you want in boxing. And it just felt like, you know, everything just finally paid off. All the hard work, jogging when I don't want to, dieting, can't eat Thanksgiving, and things like that. You know, just all that stuff paying off at that moment. And
right.
This was a really, really good feeling. You know, I was happy that everyone enjoyed the fight. I was happy that, you know, a lot of my friends and family, you know, was there to support me, and they was happy. And the whole D.C. was happy. So I just felt really good.
And right now, Amir Khan and his team are appealing the decision with the WBA and the IBF. it almost seems like they're trying to bully you into a rematch. Well, what are your thoughts on this whole appeal?
Just like you said, it seemed like they're just trying to bully me into a rematch, you know, which I have no problem with rematching him. But it's just like, you know, he got to understand that he lost. He's no longer the champion. He don't dictate what happens, when and where and how much we're going to fight for. You know, I have say-so now. You know, I have the belts. He want to fight me now. So, you know, I dictate things. Of course, you know, they came and, you know, try to get the rematch immediately and said, you know, they'll give me this and it's going to be here and all this. And I'm like, hold up. Last I checked, I'm the champ now. And you just don't dictate that. So, you know, he just got to be patient, you know, and understand that and understand his position now. And I just think he just need to be patient. The rematch will happen, I believe, and just go from there.
And you do have options. Timothy Bradley's out there,
a guy.
I know you would like to get revenge with. But do you see ultimately, do you see that you ultimately will rematch Khan? That will be your next fighter? It's something you really don't know at this point.
At this point, I don't know who's the next opponent. But I do know this. That's the fight that I want.
Right.
I know that there will be a rematch one way or another. If it's my next fight or the next or the next after that. And like you said, I have a lot of options. You know, I got the Khan fight, the Timothy Bradley fight, and then still I got two belts now. You know, I have two mandatory challenges that's waiting in line to fight for the title. So, you know, I do have options. And, you know, we will explore all of them and see what's the best deal, you know, for me. And we'll go from there.
And a lot of people called you crazy for not going and fighting Khan back in April. A lot of people called you crazy. Ultimately, you would take a fight for $10,000 against a tough guy, Victor Cayo. And ultimately, you won that fight and you got the terms that you wanted. I mean, what made you reject the fight the first time around?
A lot of people said the $300,000, you know, it's a lot of money that most have made. And all of that is true. But the thing is with me is just treat me fair. If we fight over in England, it's going to be 20,000 people there that spent their money to watch the fight.
Right.
So with all that being said, the fight will generate a whole lot of money. I felt as though $300,000 could have been a better number, you know, not really worrying about what Khan was getting, but I just believe the split of the pie was just much, too much for him. And then you got a lot of other people who, you know, who's not even getting in the ring, who at the end of the day is going to walk away with more money than me.
Right.
I put my life on the line just like Amir do, just like any other boxer. You know, they got to understand that, you know, boxing is not easy. We train hard, and we fight our hearts out. So, you know, we put our life on the line. And I just felt as though $300 was just not enough for me to go over to England, put my career on the line, put my health on the line. And I just felt as though that wasn't enough money. Just being over in England, I didn't feel comfortable about that. They had options. You know, Golden Boy wanted options. I wasn't comfortable with that. They had a rematch clause where I was pretty much taking the same amount of money if I win the fight and I rematch with Amir, and I'm coming in as a champ taking about the same amount of money, just a little bit more. I wasn't comfortable with that. And it was just too much. Too many things that just wasn't right. And I just knew me taking this mandatory fight, you know, would get me, you know, a better deal. And I knew eventually, you know, I wanted to fight Khan then, but sometimes you just have to be patient. And, you know, the people were saying, well, you fought for $10,000. Yeah, and at the end of the day, I didn't see much of that money. You know, once you break everything down and pay your sanctioning fee on it and, you know, your medicals and all the above and training camp costs, to have a training camp, I fought for free. And but the thing was, you know, I told them, you know, I'll fight Khan for free. If he wasn't getting any money, I'll be glad to fight him for no money. The fact is, you know, he was getting a lot of money, and I didn't feel as though I got enough. Kyle, you know, I got $10,000. Kyle got $12,000. I was okay with that.
Right. And it turned out very well for you. Were you surprised that he took the fight in D.C.?
I was very surprised. I think, you know, Amir, he's one of those guys who, you know, when he gets the idea in his head, and, you know, he goes with it. You know, he don't put a lot of thought into it. And I have to give him, you know, credit. You know, he's a brave individual. And, you know, a lot of times when he gets those thoughts in his head, he goes with it. And, you know, he came to D.C. Like a month before the fight was scheduled, and he said he had a good time. He wouldn't mind fighting here. And he thought he had a big enough fan base here to have more fans than me here. And so, you know, he went with his idea.
And, Lamont, we've heard the story numerous times. You and your brother Anthony, you guys were homeless. You've been at the bottom. Now you're at the top. Does that make this victory all the more sweeter?
Oh, yeah. You know, just growing up, you know, a lot of times, you know, things were really rough. But I just remember, you know, some nights, you know, those rough nights where it was cold and we were outside and barely clothed. Yeah, I just thought about me being the world champion and me fighting, you know, on TV, HBO, and things like that. And just for all that to come true, exactly the way I saw it, you know, it's crazy, man. And I just, you know, I thank God every day for, you know, giving me this opportunity to live out my dream. And it's not too often that people have to do that. And I just realized I'm blessed. I went through those things when I was younger for a reason, just to make me a stronger man right now, and just prepare me for this journey that I'm on.
And the journey continues for you. And 3 days to Christmas, Lamont, I mean, you earned $650,000 for the con fight. You got the belts. What do you want for Christmas at this point?
Just to spend some time with my daughter, you know, through training camp. You know, if anybody know me, you see her all the time. She's 3 years old. You know, I missed her birthday in November. You know, I saw her once a week. And then towards the end, I didn't see her at all. So, you know, we have a really, really close relationship. And I just want to continue that and make up for some lost time with her. That's good enough for me, just to see her wake up and open her gifts and be happy and play games, and I play with her. That's good enough for me.
And, Lamont, I saw on your Twitter page that, have you received the belts at this point?
No, I haven't received the belts. We had some problems with I think the sanctioning fees or something. There was a little confusion going on there. I should have the belts tomorrow or soon, hopefully.
Tomorrow. They're overnighting. They overnight them, you'll have them in the morning.
Yeah, and there's probably a little problem with the, you know, the holidays and, you know, mail and stuff and things like that. Things don't move as fast as you would like, so.
Right.
Hopefully we get them tomorrow, and because a lot of people is, you know, anxious to see the belts and take pictures and things like that. So I just hope they really get here so we can take care of all of that.
Lamont, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. I mean, we wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward. And I was looking on Twitter, and I saw all boxers around really happy that you got this victory, man. And
yeah.
I was rooting for you in that fight. I heard your story. I heard your struggle. You're a testament to hard work and getting it done, and you got it done against Amir Khan. And you're doing what you need to do. And it was a pleasure talking to you. We wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward. And let's do this again, sir.
All right, thanks, man. I appreciate everything. We can definitely do it, you know, again, anytime. I'm here. I don't do too much, so I'm always by my phone anytime.
Lamont, take care. Merry Christmas to you.
All right, same to you.
All right. Lamont Peterson, the new WBA and IBF Junior Welterweight Champion. An amazing story. The guy and his brother, Anthony, were homeless. They were homeless. and they made something out of themselves. And right now he is the champion of the world. Seems like a great guy. And we wish him nothing but the best of luck. Got the key to the city today, and then that's a good thing. That's a great thing for him. And, you know, things are looking on the up and up for Lamont Peterson, and it was a great fight. It was a great fight against Amir Khan. And he came out, he battled, he fought, and he changed styles. He switched styles in that fight. He's usually a boxer, and he turned a brawler in that fight. Did it help that he was in D.C.? Possibly. But guess what? At the end of the day, it wasn't a robbery. It was a very close fight. And you can make an argument, maybe Khan won, but I think you also can make a very legitimate argument that Lamont Peterson won that fight. And ultimately, he did win that fight. And right now, he is the new WBA and IBF champion. Does not have the belts yet, but he will be getting the belts overnighted to him. So he's going to get those belts tomorrow. And that's going to be a great thing. That's going to be a great thing. The key is he's got to stay hungry now that he's on top. I mean, but his story is just a testament to hard work, a testament in the belief in yourself, and the belief that you can make something out of yourself, whether you're homeless or whether you're with a home or without a home, whether you're by yourself or whether you're without your parents or without anything. You can make something of yourself. And that's one of the beauties of this country, the ability to be able to make things of yourself. And if Lamont Peterson, the guy who was homeless, can make something of himself, then by golly, there are no excuses out there for anybody. No excuses. No excuses for anybody. Lamont Peterson is a testament to hard work, and he is the new WBA and IBF junior welterweight champion. For a reason. Hard work pays off, everybody. Hard work, dedication. And speaking of hard work and dedication, that's a moniker used by Floyd Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather is going to jail. Plea bargaining agreement. He will be given a 90-day jail sentence. And surprisingly, I didn't think he would get that much time. I really didn't. But ultimately, he pled guilty. And he will be given 90 days in prison. And it's going. Obviously, he had a date. He had a date set aside on May 5th, and many were hoping that would be against Manny Pacquiao, but at this point, obviously, it's not going to be against Manny Pacquiao. I mean, Floyd, if he's going to fight Pacquiao, it's probably going to be later in the year, but Floyd Mayweather will be doing time. He will be doing time. And I'm surprised. I didn't think, again, he would do time. I didn't think he would do time. But he's going to be in jail. The sentence starts January 6th. So he will be reporting to prison on January 6th. And he will get 90 days. And for whatever reason, the Mayweather men have had issues with putting hands on women. Roger Mayweather, his trainer, his uncle, had some issues with that, and ultimately Roger avoided jail time, but Roger has had issues with that, and I think Roger did get time ultimately for that years back. So, you know, the Mayweathers have had problems with this situation, with putting hands on women. And if Floyd Mayweather, they're saying if he does, has good behavior as a prisoner, he could get 30 days taken off of that sentence. But, I mean, he pled guilty to a misdemeanor battery, domestic violence, and harassment. And this was a situation with the mother of his children. He had an issue there back in September of 2010. And, again, he must surrender to Clark County Detention Center in Las Vegas. And he will be getting standard issued blue jail jumpsuit. So he'll be getting that. And so it's going to be a little different for him. It's definitely going to be a little different for him. And if you saw 24/7, if you saw his house, you would know that his house is very beautiful. His house is very beautiful. That's a very beautiful house that Floyd Mayweather has. Clark County Detention Center probably will not be the same type of accommodations. You're probably not going to have the same type of accommodations if you're Floyd Mayweather. And that's, you know, I mean, hopefully, ultimately, when you see a guy go to jail, you ultimately hope that when they go to jail that they change things, think about some things, and become a better person. Not going to have the same type of accommodations. His bathroom will be next to his bed or close to his bed. So that's not good accommodations. And, well, I mean, he's not going to be able to throw his money around either. He's not going to be able to throw his money around like he tends to do. And so he's going to do time. He will do time, 90 days. If he has good behavior, it might get trimmed to 60. But that's definitely going to delay the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight. Well, at least, I mean, they were talking that there possibly could be some negotiations. At this point, nothing has been substantiated in terms of whether or not it truly is negotiations going on. But Mayweather and his team had set aside May 5th as a date for his return. That's going to probably change. That's going to be pushed back. And maybe it'll be a fall fight with Pacquiao now. Maybe we'll see Pacquiao Mayweather the fall of 2012. Hopefully. But again, Floyd Mayweather, sentenced to 90 days in prison. He pled guilty to misdemeanor battery, domestic violence, and harassment. And then he's going to be doing 90 days. Clark County Detention Center in Las Vegas. And, you know, because of his celebrity status, he's probably going to be separated away from the other inmates. He probably will be separated from his other inmates and given a level of protection because of who he is and what he is. But, I mean, do you see any prisoners challenging Floyd Mayweather? I mean, he's a guy that can really punch, obviously. He's a boxer. He can punch. So will guys challenge Floyd Mayweather? Will guys challenge him? That should be an interesting thing. I think Floyd, it'll be an uneventful situation for him. He'll do his time, and I think he'll get out. But hopefully, while doing his time, he learns valuable lessons. Maybe he'll learn a valuable lesson about some things. Maybe. Hopefully. But we shall see moving forward with Floyd Mayweather Jr. But obviously, we're not going to get Pacquiao Mayweather. And that's a little upsetting to me. May 5th, the Mayweather team has set aside May 5th in Las Vegas. But obviously, it's not going to be Pacquiao Mayweather in that fight. And that's, you know, it is what it is. But that's the situation. And again, hopefully, Floyd does learn and become a better man, a better person moving forward. Hopefully. And let me go back to the NBA now. Before we spoke to Lamont Peterson, I did give my prediction at the Miami Heat would be in the NBA Finals. And so that's going to happen. The Miami Heat will be in the NBA Finals. The Miami Heat will win the NBA Finals. Now it's just a matter of who they're going to play. And initially, my mindset was Kobe and the Lakers. And I might have to come off of that right now because I'm not. With Lamar Odom out of there, I think that affects their versatility and their situation. I think that really affects them. And so, I mean, we'll see. But I think I have the Miami Heat in the finals against the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Miami Heat against the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think OKC takes that next step. Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook and those boys, they take that next step. And I think they will ultimately make it to the NBA Finals, but they will lose to LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and the Miami Heat. And I also think the MVP of this year will be LeBron James. He has so much to prove. So many people have doubted him. So many people have put dirt on his name. He has so much to prove, and I think he will find a way to prove it. He is that good, and I think he will show it. He will show it. So I think the Miami Heat in Oklahoma City. Thunder will be in the NBA Finals, and I think ultimately the Miami Heat will win the NBA Finals, and they will become champions, 2012 champions of the NBA. The Miami Heat will be the champions. We, believe it or not, that's how I believe, they are the most talented team in basketball. They have the most talent. There's no one more talented than them, than the Miami Heat. No one. No one more talented than the Miami Heat. No one more talented than the Miami Heat. You can't tell me that LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and those boys, no one can hang with them. So I like the Miami Heat to be the NBA champions. Let's bring in now the one, the only 11-time Pro Bowler, the great Willie Rofe. Willie, how are you, sir?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the Miami Heat did a real good job keeping that core group together. But I don't know what this offense, he's talking about running, where he's he went and met with the coach from Oregon, and they're talking about spreading the court and running up and down. You know, you got to run when it comes, I mean, during regular season, that'll work. But when it comes crunch time and playoff time, you got to be able to run good half-court set offensive plays and be able to and score points. And last year, the Miami Heat in the playoffs, when they came crunch time, they couldn't score points when they needed. They had leads going into the games, even in the Dallas series, but they couldn't hold the lead late in the game. And you have to be able to run good half-court set offensive plays to score baskets when it comes to keep possessions in the playoffs.
Definitely, and I think what's going to happen, this team being a year together, it's going to help. It's definitely going to help on a defensive end. I think it's going to help on the offensive end. And they're going to know a lot better the guys to go to in what situation, at what times. And I think it's going to – it's just they have the most talent in basketball. Anytime you can roll out LeBron, D-Wade, and Bosh, they are the most talented team in basketball, and I think it'll be enough.
Well, I hope so, too. I mean, I was cheering for those guys last year, and they played real good, especially, you know, in Eastern Conference Finals and against, you know, Boston and against Chicago. And I think Chicago's going to be and New York's going to be tougher with Chandler. But I think Chicago and them will ultimately probably be in Eastern Conference Finals again and go ahead to the finals. And I think Dallas possibly takes a step back. Everybody's predicting Oklahoma Thunder to go to the finals this year.
And that's who I'm picking this year. I think Dallas will take a step back. Tyson Chandler is going to be missed. He was the guy that kind of gave him that attitude on defense.
And J.J. Barea.
Right, and I neglected to say that, but J.J. Barea is going to be big too. And Caron Butler, even though he was injured for most of last season, but when he went down, he was the second leading scorer for the Mavericks. So they're going to miss that too. So we'll see what happens in this NBA season. Let's go to the NFL now, Willie, and the Green Bay Packers, they are no longer undefeated, losing to the Kansas City Chiefs. Granted, Greg Jennings didn't play. Granted, they're a little banged up on the offensive line. But Kyle Orton was effective, threw for 299 yards against that Packer defense. If you're the Green Bay Packers, are you concerned?
Yeah, I feel a little concerned. I mean, you need to get healthy. You got some older, you know, you got your Wilson still playing good, but you got some older guys that need some rest. I don't know what the situation is with Chad Clifton. He hurt his hamstring. Is he going to be able to come back for the end of the season and for the playoff run? The left tackle got exposed against Tommy Ali last week. And, the young guy that they've been playing over there, like you said, I think they're going to have to move the pocket more, move the pocket around more, and give teams different looks, because once you've been doing the same thing in this late in the season, other teams are going to start to figure it out. So they're going to have to move the pocket and do other things, be a little more creative, maybe keep a guy in to help block or do some more chipping to switch it up on these defenses. Kind of like what the Chargers did last week.
And you look at it now with this Packer team, they're 31st against the pass in terms of defense. They struggle on the defensive side of the football. And I think each and every week they're going to need big-time performances out of Aaron Rodgers. And they've gotten it throughout this whole season, except for last week. But if you look at it, they're vulnerable.
I think they're very vulnerable. Just like we can say the same thing about the New Orleans Saints. I mean, you've got Drew Brees, who's been playing great football, you know, since earlier in the season for the last 7-8 weeks. And then, you know, like you said, the same thing with them. They give up a lot of points. And like you said, it's going to like we've been talking about all year. That's why we have had Baltimore and Pittsburgh and some of these other teams up there, you know, even the 49ers. I mean, you know, they're not giving up any rushing touchdowns. Offensively, they're not going to score a lot of points, but they can slow you down defensively. And if they get a team that matches up and slows them down defensively, they might be in some trouble.
And you look at the Chiefs now, at this point, they're sixth. They're last place in the AFC West, but they still have a shot to win the division, an outside shot. But if they play well coming down the stretch, does Romeo Crennel deserve to get the job next season, or at least have an opportunity to interview for it?
I think he will interview for it, but ultimately I think they go with a different moment with the different total situation. I think he does have the opportunity to interview, but I don't think they're getting the head job.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think he gets the head job either. I mean, it's going to take them getting into the playoffs for that to happen, and even still, I'm still not sure he would get the head job even if that happened. But we'll see what happens with the Chiefs. They're 6-8 in last place in the AFC West, but they still have an outside shot to win the AFC West. And speaking of the AFC West, you have the Broncos now who lost to the Patriots. They're 8-6. The Raiders lost to the Lions. They're in second place at 7-7. You got the Chargers, who probably is the best team talent-wise in that division at 7-7 as well. When it's all said and done, who wins the AFC West?
Right now, watching the teams play, I would say I give the advantage to the Chargers just by watching them play. I don't know if they're on a tiebreaker. They might not own a tiebreaker with the Raiders, but I give the A's to the Chargers right now. They look like they're playing some good football. I think the pressure's off right now because of everything's been announced about the head coach and the general manager, so I think these guys are just playing football right now, and I think a lot of the pressure's off because we already pretty much know North's probably gone after this year.
Right. But and you look at that team, I mean, that impressive performance against the Ravens, and just the way they've been playing down the stretch here, you almost think North should be fired.
Oh, well, I think that the general manager is in trouble too because he let those go and some of those guys go. So, it just looks like they've been playing better football. And Antonio Gates is starting to get healthy this year. He's been hurt all year with the foot injury.
Right. We're talking to 11-time Pro Bowler Willie Rofen. Willie, Big Ben Roethlisberger, he struggled to move around Monday night against the 49ers. Did throw 3 interceptions in that game, and ultimately the 49ers would win that game. Right now, the Steelers are 10-4, but the Ravens hold the tiebreaker over the Steelers since they have beaten the Steelers twice this season. At this point, would you sit Big Ben down and try to get this guy healthy for the playoffs?
I didn't think he should have played last week, and when he was obviously hurting and wasn't having a lot of effectiveness in that game, I thought they should have pulled him out last week. They should have rested him last week. I guess it matters who they played the last two games, and I guess they're trying to get that lead, you know, get that lead over the Ravens, but he wasn't productive, so you got to pull a guy at that point.
Right, it's going to be hard. I mean, granted, they have St. Louis and Cleveland as their last two games, but the Ravens do hold the tiebreaker over them since they beat the Steelers twice. So if the Ravens and Steelers tie, you know, the Ravens win the division. So winning the AFC North is not out of the question, but it's going to be difficult. And the Ravens do have the Browns and the Bengals left. And so we'll see. I mean, they still have an outside shot, but I don't think he should have played in that game against the 49ers after the way he looked. And I think they should sit him down, get him right for the playoffs, because if he's not right in the playoffs, they don't really have a shot.
They don't have a shot. And whoever they got is backing him up, Batch or whoever they're gonna put in, it would be good to give him a little playing time just in case Big Ben goes down again. With the way that line is played, he's taking a lot of hits this year. So it would be good for them to let the backup quarterback get some playing time, get his feet wet, just in case they need to play him.
Definitely. And we'll see what happens with that situation. And Willie, the Philadelphia Eagles are still alive. After falling to 4-8 against the Seattle Seahawks, everybody thought that it was over for this team. But, hey, if the New York Jets beat the Giants on Sunday and the Eagles beat the Cowboys on Sunday, and then the following week, if the Giants can beat the Cowboys, the Philadelphia Eagles can win the NFC East. Willie,
I'm going to tell you what. They've been looking great. They've been playing outstanding football on both sides of the ball. Deshaun's playing better. McCoy's playing good. I mean, they look like they're fresh legs. I don't know what happened the last couple weeks, but I mean, they haven't been turning the ball over. He's been playing some outstanding football the last couple weeks. I don't know what got into him.
And you look at it. I mean, like you said, the defense is playing better. That's one of the things that's gotten into him. And Michael Vick's back, and that helps.
And he's been playing some good football. And when Michael Vick's not turning the ball over, and I think? I think him having that little break he got the rest of his body up, and he needed that break with the rib injury and everything. And he was earlier this year they were getting after him. Let's hit Vick, knock him down, knock him around. And all those bumps and bruises, all of it added up. And he looks a lot fresher right now, and that's good going late into the season. But that's going to have to play a role. If Andy Reid's there, whoever takes over, is going to have to find ways to keep him fresh. Because, like I said, he can't take all those hits. And you're going to have to find ways to keep him fresh so where he's not getting so banged up in the middle of that season. Because you know he's going to play. But you can tell he was hurting at some points in the season.
Right. And we'll see what happens with him. But you're right. They're going to have to find a way moving forward to protect the guy. He's not a very big guy. He's not a very big guy. So they're going to have to find a way to protect him moving forward. But I look at it, I mean, do I think this can happen? This can happen. This is not out of the realm of possibility. I mean, you look at it, the Giants and Jets, both teams coming off bad losses, but the Jets play well in December. This is the time they usually step it up and play some big-time football. And then you look at it, the following week, the Giants will have the Cowboys in New York. And so, I mean, this could happen. Ultimately, we'll see if the Eagles can beat the Cowboys, and we'll see what happens this week with the Jets and Giants, because the Eagles, if they beat the Cowboys and all those things happen, they have the Redskins the last week of the season. The Redskins playing decent football, but that's a game the Eagles can win. It's not unlikely. It's not unlikely. It could happen.
It could happen. And that would be just if they come back and win that division, nobody wants to play the Eagles in the playoffs. I'm gonna tell you that right now. Nobody. If they win, if they run the course the rest of this year and get in the playoffs, nobody wants to play them. No, I'm telling you, because they have a lot of weapons, and the way that defense is playing, and this kid that has 16-17 sacks,
Babin,
could be up for the defensive MVP award the way he's playing. He's been playing some outstanding football.
Right. And we'll see what happens in that. Like you said, I don't think anybody wants to see the Philadelphia Eagles in the playoffs. And it's unlikely, but it's possible. But like you said, to your point, you don't want to see this team because of the talent that it is on this roster. There's a lot of talent on this roster. And talent-wise, you look at it, I mean, you could say this team is, well, you have to argue in terms of quarterback Aaron Rodgers and Michael Vick, but you could say talent-wise, this team has as much talent as the Green Bay Packers.
I would say they do have as much talent as the Green Bay Packers. With McCoy, what he can do at the backfield, with Deshaun and Macklin are playing, and Selleck, the big tight end, they got a lot. They're extremely talented, and when they defensively, they're playing better football than the Packers are playing. So,
right.
I will, the Philadelphia Eagles are the scariest team if you want to have to deal with them in the playoff time.
Right, right. And we'll see if they can even get in. But if they get in, there could be a problem for a lot of people. And, Willie, just like every week, we got to get your top five, the top five teams in the National Football League. Who do you got?
Well, even though Green Bay lost with that game, I just think that was coming, so I'm not going to hold that against them. They're still number one. But a couple teams have slid. I have to put New Orleans, even though they don't slow anybody down, I put New Orleans at two.
Right.
New England Patriots at three.
Okay.
At four, because Baltimore and Pittsburgh lost, I had to put the 49ers.
All right.
And then at five, I guess we'd have to go with the five team would have to be the Baltimore Ravens.
We'll go with the Baltimore Ravens at number five. I you can't really argue with that. I mean, Atlanta Falcons are playing better football, but Baltimore, I think I can't argue with that.
Or we have to go. We have to go with the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, it would have to be the Atlanta Falcons or Baltimore. I mean, Baltimore just doesn't do it offensively. So, like you said, nobody wants to play the Atlanta Falcons either.
That's true. That's four
teams in the NFC out of the top five, though. The only team I have in the AFC is the New England Patriots.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I mean, New England and the Saints, and in some respect, the Packers are very similar teams in this respect. They can score a lot on the offensive side of the ball, but their defenses are very vulnerable. So they're very similar in that respect. They can score a whole bunch of points, but their defense can give up a whole bunch of points as well.
The thing that makes that would make their defense good, just like we saw with the 99 Rams, just like we saw with those teams that do give up a lot, if the defense can create turnovers,
right,
then that helps them, because the Rams gave up a lot too in 99, but they did create turnovers. And the Saints, the 2010 Super Bowl champion Saints, defense gave up some, but they created a lot of turnovers and took the ball away. So if they can take the ball away, then that's going to make those defense better. And that's what Greg Williams tried to do in New Orleans. He wants to take the ball away. So if they can create turnovers like Green Bay's been able to do some, like New Orleans has been able to do some, the Patriots defense has stepped up some at certain points, then they can be more productive. But the key to slowing those teams down is getting after the quarterback. And that was the first time we really saw Rodgers, Ali, and that defense got after Aaron Rodgers. And you saw what happened in that game. It was totally changed.
Yeah.
It totally changed the momentum of the game.
Yeah, they did a good job on Aaron Rodgers, beat him up a little bit, got some pressure on him, man. We'll see. I mean, I don't think it's a slam dunk that the Green Bay Packers will win the Super Bowl. I don't think it's a maybe a few weeks back we were thinking maybe they would go undefeated, but you see the vulnerability there. You see that the offensive line has struggled a little bit with injuries. You see that the defense has struggled this whole season. You can make some plays against this defense, obviously. The key is, can you shut down Aaron Rodgers and those guys a little bit? Can you slow them down a little bit? And also, can you avoid turnovers? And that would be the big thing. But like you said, the Saints are dangerous. The Saints are a dangerous team. The Falcons are a dangerous team. And if the Eagles, they get in, they are a dangerous team. And I think the 49ers, it's hard with Alex Smith as their quarterback, but the way they play the way they play defense and the way they run the ball, you got to give them a shot. You have to say they have a shot.
It makes up for it. The problem you see with them is they don't stress the field enough.
Right.
Well, I mean, we didn't see them stress the field, try some long passes. They got to throw the ball down the field more. And,
right.
and like you said, that's the thing with them. They can't play catch up. It's like Debo.
Right.
I mean, the defense plays great. I mean, have the San Francisco giving them a rushing touchdown all year? maybe one.
The 49ers, right?
Yes.
I think they've given up one.
Maybe one all year.
Right.
One rushing touchdown. So they're playing great defense. Great football on the defensive end, but they got to stretch the field. So you're right. I think I would have to put Atlanta. I would have to give them the slight edge over Baltimore because with the 49ers and with Baltimore, you just don't know offensively what they're going to be able to give you.
Right.
I mean, we can't really talk about Pittsburgh because the quarterback situation. But if Big Ben goes down, who was going to be the one to carry him?
I guess it would have to be Charlie Batch in that defense. And that's going to be a tall order. I mean, Charlie Batch, I mean, when he played for Big Ben last year, was not bad. He was not bad. And overall, Charlie Batch is not a bad quarterback. He's a very good backup in this league. But, you know, obviously he's not Big Ben. Obviously.
Well, I think Charlie Batch should have been playing last week. And you agree with that, too.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, the way Ben was moving around. He did throw for over 300 yards, but he did throw three interceptions. And the way he was moving around, he didn't look good. He just didn't look good. And so I agree with you. I mean, but with a guy like Big Ben, a tough guy, a guy like that, you almost have to give. If he says he can go, you almost have to let him go.
Yep, you got to let him go. If you don't think his foot's going to get even worse. The only way that foot was going to get worse, I guess, they're going to say, if it got rolled up again.
Right.
The only thing you're going to do is re-enter it if somebody rolls it up. You know, he didn't get rolled up again, it looked like, but it just looked like he was limping around all day.
And Willie, Christmas is a few days away. What does Willie Rofe want for Christmas?
Willie wants to watch some good football game. I mean, good basketball on Christmas Day, and make sure everybody has a good Christmas out there, and make sure everybody has something to eat. Eat on Christmas Day.
There's nothing, maybe an iPad, new iPhone, anything. You might already have those things, but anything you want? Big TV screen?
No, nothing in particular I want. Just stability. Stability,
right.
And structure at home.
Okay.
Stability,
maybe a Hall
and structure at home.
Maybe a Hall of Fame bid?
Well, that won't be until February. I can't wait for that until after Christmas. That won't be until the Super Bowl. We're a little early on the Hall of Fame deal.
Okay. Fair enough. Willie, as always, good time here. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year and all that other good stuff. Appreciate you stopping by.
All right, thank you.
The one, the only, the great, Willie Rofe, and pleasure talking to Willie Rofe. And, you know, moving forward, we'll see what happens in these NFL playoffs. Who's going to do it? Who's going to be successful? Will the Green Bay Packers repeat? They are vulnerable. They show some vulnerability this week against the Kansas City Chiefs, and they're a team that you can score points against. You can score points against that ball club. You can score points against that ball club. You can, and I think teams will. Moving forward, we want to thank Evan Mathis of the Philadelphia Eagles for stopping by. Wishing the Eagles nothing but the best of luck this week against the Dallas Cowboys. There's an outside shot. Not an outside shot, a fairly legitimate, fairly decent shot that the Eagles will get into the playoffs if they can handle their business and certain things happen, but we shall see. But we want to thank Evan Mathis for stopping by. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at EvanMathis16. Also, the new IBF and WBA junior welterweight champion, Lamont Peterson, thank him for stopping by. Make sure you support all the things that he is doing right now. Lamont Peterson is on top of the world right now. And, again, he had the key to the city in Washington, D.C., that is a beautiful thing. That's a great thing. This is a guy who was homeless at one point in his life. Homeless at one point in his life. He is that no more. And so big things going on with him. And make sure you follow him on Twitter at KingPete26. Excuse me, that's KingPete26. Make sure you follow him on Twitter one more time at KingPete26. You can listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. Make sure you follow the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. That's at Twitter at GoForItGant. Follow me there. GoForItGant on Twitter. Follow me. I'll follow back and follow back. And if you follow me, I'll follow you. And that is a beautiful thing. It's the Christmas spirit, right? Give and it'll give back to you, and that's a beautiful thing. Anyway, again, listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgant, and make sure you follow the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. For everybody here at GoForIt, we wish you a merry, happy Christmas. It was a pleasure talking to you throughout this year. We will be back next week, and that will be the final show of the year. But it's a pleasure talking to you each and every time. Again, Merry Christmas, and wish you and yours a happy and safe Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and all that beautiful, lovely stuff. For everybody here at GoForIt, I'm Paul Gant. See you later. Bye.